So the 1920s was a period of rapid social and economic development. The rapid economic development was primarily a result of the economic policies of Andrew Mellon, which primarily that policy included the reduction of tax rates for the wealthy as well as for corporations, which allowed for the expansion of capital to be infused into corporations. This allowed for those corporations to expand, thereby hiring more workers. More workers means more people with money. More people with money means more spending of that money. And so we enter into this mass consumption economy coming out of this mass production economy of Rockefeller and Carnegie. Individuals were encouraged to spend through advertising campaigns, which largely focused on using women and their sexuality to encourage the purchasing of products. And for the first time in history, individuals are going to be allowed to purchase items on credit, purchase items through an installment plan. And the item that they were purchasing most was the new reliable automobile made famous by Henry Ford, the Model T. Henry Ford was able to, through his Fordism, through the standardization movement, able to produce a Model T every 10 seconds off the assembly line. And with the mass production of Model Ts, the price for Model Ts was going to be reduced to approximately $246, which allowed for the average consumer to purchase a Model T. This car, this automobile, is going to revolutionize American culture and American society. American culture and American society is going to be a response to, or the result of, 6 million new jobs coming into the United States through the auto and automotive industry. You're going to have spinoff or related industries, including that of rubber, glass, fabric. So the kind of social change that we're going to begin to experience as a result of the automobile are more freedom, more leisure, more excitement. But at the same time, you're going to see bootleggers, which are going to be using the automobile. You're going to see organized crime that begin to use the automobile. Young people are going to move out of the family parlor and into the back seat of automobiles. But outside of job creation, whether it's with the automobile industry directly or in a related industry like rubber, glass, fabric, paint, service stations, garages, the automobile, probably next only to the television, is probably going to change American culture more than any other. It's also going to dramatically reduce the size of the world by increasing our ability to move. Another example of this same concept would be flight, would be air travel. The Wright brothers' famous flight is going to happen in 1903, and within 20 years, Charles Lindbergh is going to make the very first transatlantic flight in his plane, the Spirit of St. Louis. He's going to land to a hero's welcome and usher in this age of flight in which we're now going to be transporting mail by plane, cargo by plane. And in 20 years, from 1927, say, to 1945, the airplane is going to be a primary motive, or my primary factor in warfare. We're going to be using very large planes to fly very great distances to drop some very big bombs. So the third thing that's going to dramatically reduce the size of the world is radio. Radio is going to bring the world into people's homes with comedy shows like Amos and Andy. But at the same time, world events are going to play out now right in people's living rooms and in people's parlors, in front of their ears, if you will, so to speak. And the one part of this American social climate that's going to be affected greatly is going to be politics. Politicians now are going to have to adjust to this new medium, because now their voices are going to go straight into the ears of the American public, as opposed to their words being read in speeches, etc. Hollywood is going to emerge as the movie capital of the United States. Propaganda films out of World War I popularized television, the very first movie being The Great Train Robbery in 1903. And the very first full-length motion picture is The Birth of a Nation, D.W. Griffith, in 1915. This movie, The Birth of a Nation, is going to be consistent with the rise of the Klan in this period in time, in response to the massive waves of immigrants coming over here, as well as the mass migration of African Americans out of the South and into northern industrial cities. The Birth of a Nation glorifies Klan membership of the Reconstruction era as a patriotic organization. The very first talking film is The Jazz Singer. And the collective response of all of this, the movement of people, the introduction of radio, the expansion of films, is going to have the tremendous effect of creating and generating a macro culture, a culture in which the majority of people belong to a same a cultural identity, slowly eroding away some of the cultural seclusion that might have existed prior to this movement. And the 1920s is also about this macro culture going to experience a very wide degree of social, sexual exploration. Margaret Sanger is going to campaign for, advocate for birth control. Girls are going to begin to shorten their hemlines so that their ankles are being seen. Women are going to be smoking. Their hair is going to be bobbed. They're going to be referred to as flappers. And this is going to experience some pushback. Conservatives, traditionalists are going to push back and suggest that this is not progress, but rather a slipping of our moral values. But these young people are going to continue to press those boundaries, and they're going to find validation in science. Sigmund Freud, a psychoanalyst, a Viennese psychologist, he writes majority of his stuff at the turn of the century, but by the 1920s, his stuff is going to be read very it's going to find its way into our mainstream culture, being read by young people, and they're going to find validation in his theories of the personality, that the majority of our psycho problems, our psychosocial problems or psychological independent problems, are a result of repressed aggression and repressed sexuality. And Sigmund Freud's going to urge the exploration of that social sexuality, and this, according to Freud, generates a more psychologically healthy individual. At the same time, with regards to literature, you have F. Scott Fitzgerald, Sinclair Lewis, Ernest Hemingway, these writers of the 20s, which are going to challenge middle-class conformity. The idea of conforming to middle-class values to them was seen as though you might literally, at least in terms of your personality, disappear. You would become so much like others in your conformity that your individuality would cease to have a cultural identity. They're going to, of course, we're going to have a pause in this nonconformist movement during the Great Depression and during the Second World War. But afterwards, this is when you get in 1947, J.D. Salinger, who writes The Catcher in the Rye. This is what Holden Caulfield's main fear is, that he might be, quote, phony, meaning he might conform. He even says with disgust, I might be a lawyer one day. This idea that you would become so much like this middle class identity that we as an individual, or as we as a people, would lose our sense of cultural identity. At the same time, you have a cultural, artistic, literary revival among African Americans. The largest population of African Americans in the world at this time is in Upper Manhattan in Harlem. With 150,000 African Americans, you see, like I said, a cultural, artistic, literary revival, even a musical revival. As African Americans came out of the South, jazz came with them, Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, but as far as literary works, Langston Hughes, the works of Zora Neale Hurston, the works of Claude McKay, this is going to stimulate interest in African American culture. Despite all of this rapid social change, financially, we were not paying attention to the writing on the wall. We were not paying attention to the problems, to the conflicts, to the things that were happening on Wall Street. The overspeculation that had become so rampant, purchasing things, sometimes sight unseen, buying on margin, going to the bank and taking out a loan for items like stock, and purchasing that stock. That stock then falling in value, and then us not having the revenue to pay back the loan that we took out. Andrew Mellon's trickle-down economics is going to have the adverse effect of shifting the financial burden from the wealthy onto the middle and lower classes. In 1921, a person who had a salary or an income of $1 million paid approximately 60% in taxes. But by 1926, that had been reduced down to only 20%, and so you were only paying $200,000 on a $1 million income. The result of this 40% reduction is going to shift the tax burden over to the working and lower class, and this is going to pinch them, coupled with buying on margin, coupled with overspeculation. The prosperity, the mass economy, the mass consumption going on during the 1920s is in effect going to actually set up the United States for the crash that was soon to come.